torn swamp, stop any mercenary. Check the British bullets in his armory.
Yeah, that was Sandinista, almost all the way through by The Clash. And before that, we heard John Lennon's Imagine. Put on Imagine because it used to be sort of a semi-theme song for the show here, Socialist Alternative Radio. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. Your co-host today are myself, Jeff, and
Diego.
And we are also part of 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. Go to 91.5 FM on the dial, as they say, or go to WMFO.org and listen by computer. Or try the archive function at WMFO. Go to schedule and hit the show you want to listen to, hopefully including Socialist Alternative Radio, and listen to last week's show. In our case,
at last,
we're on every other week. Yeah. Quick public service announcement, and if you just bear with me for 1 second, we always try to find the most political public service announcement.
We're still on with the computer. You need to put a tape over. Consider putting a tape over.
Well, this one, I think you'll see the relevance in some respects. But anyway, maybe I'll skip that one. Hold on. This is a good one. Numbers to think about: worldwide prison populations. Prisoner population rate, world map from Wikimedia Commons, prison population per 100,000 people. And it's got these wonderful colors on it, and the most populated prison system is, of course, the United States. That has the world's largest documented prison population, both in absolute and proportional terms. Think about the proportion part there. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, more than 2.2 million prisoners behind bars in the United States, a rate of 730 per 100,000 people. China, which is four times more populous than the United States, is a distant second, with 1.51 million people in prison, a rate of 117 per 100,000, while Russia has the second highest rate, 606 per 100,000, for a total of 865,000 prisoners. In other words, the United States has more people in prison, both in terms of aggregate numbers.
So you're saying
again,
that we're better off in
2.2 million. That's very good. That's exactly what a conservative would say. So if you don't like it, if you don't love it, leave it, buddy.
But they have less prisoners than us.
But you're saying kind of what a conservative might say by saying this.
Well, I said I meant it in a left way. Like,
I know.
So you're saying it's better in Russia than here.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that both stink, but the U.S. stinks worse as far as mass incarceration, as others have talked about. Michelle Alexander and others have talked a lot about that. So I don't know. I use that statistic a lot, which I've known about for a long time, of both aggregate numbers and proportionate numbers. The U.S.
Yeah, of course, most of that is African Americans and Latinos.
Yeah, being well, yeah. And because when the knee jerk, it's the freest country in the world talk comes out, I'm just like, actually not. It's the opposite. It's the most incarcerated country in the world. It takes a lot to keep this the grind of capitalism going. People think it's like this natural system, but it's not. It's a deliberate system. It's got its own rules. It's got its machinery. It's got its ways of working.
It's an industry. If you have a license plate, that's more likely made by someone in prison.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I think the prison industrial complex thing is a little overstated.
That's like one day I told you that story, right? I'm on a bike path, Minimet bike path over here, right?
Yeah.
By our wife, going towards Lexington and then Bedford. And there's a chain gang, literally a chain gang.
Wow, really?
Right in the middle of this to a highway interstate.
In Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, a couple years ago.
Had them all chained up.
Yes, a chain gang.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Like, I thought it was
sick.
Like, you ever seen that movie with
Paul Newman?
No. That movie with Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence.
Yes.
When they went to looked like that.
You obviously want to talk about movies, and I had something about that. But before you do, let's do another public service announcement. Not to read similar public service announcements too much, but I thought I would just throw this one in as well. Much shorter one, numbers to think about, public service announcement from WMFO. Some numbers to think about. The United States has less than 5% of the planet's population, but incarcerates 24% of its prisoners and accounts for 43% of the world's total military spending. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. So there you go again. So it's the freest country in the world? I think not. Could it be? Well, hopefully we'll have, it'll be one of the freest areas of the world someday when we're not measuring things by countries and so on, if that happens. But speaking of movies that you have brought, the off-air, Diego brought up another movie. What was that other one? Oh, yeah.
American Made,
yeah.
With Tom Cruise.
Here's one that is getting some talk on Facebook, sharing of opinions.
The public.
And you probably think I'm going to say Malcolm X. I'm sorry. You probably think I'm going to say the Black Panther movie. I'm not. I'm saving that for another time because I haven't seen it.
Well, it's about time.
But here's...
I've had that comic book and it said nobody ever touches it. I wonder why.
Well, but be careful because it was unfortunately written by a upper middle class, one of the co-writers, upper middle class guy who writes for The Atlantic a lot, Ta-Nehisi Coates. I might be screwing up his first name. And this guy is very conservative, actually, politically. He talks about race in such a way that is actually kind of reactionary in a lot of ways. And the liberals love him, but
the comic book was kind of reactionary.
Yeah, so that's what I was getting at. Yeah. People that I've known, including African Americans, Black people, etc., have gone to see the film and been disappointed because it's got this very weird political content in the sense that I don't even want to get into it because I haven't seen it. I don't want to do that. But basically, it doesn't... Like the way it was explained to me was, well, gee, the one revolutionary in the film that wants to spread the wealth of the kingdom to the rest of the world, the hidden kingdom, you know, is killed and seen to be a bad guy. Whereas the CIA guy is redeemable at the end of the movie. You know, it's like, I don't even want to get into it. I could be wrong about how I'm characterizing it. Go read the reviews. Yeah. I'm about to talk about an interview with Algier Hawkins, and Algier has promised a review of that film.
It's not going to be like what we felt when I was watching Avatar.
Well, you know, a lot of people that are really into identity politics and stuff, they hate Avatar. They call it the white man savior complex and all that. And I'm like, but you're missing the whole anti-imperialist message there by a Hollywood director. I mean, how amazing is that? And no, you can't have a white character, so-called, especially in the future when I think racial categories might be a little different or used differently or whatever, leading a rebellion on a planet. I mean, et cetera, et cetera. I don't even, you know, there's just so many reasons why that doesn't make any sense to me. And he was taking on the persona, the avatar. You missed the whole point, avatar, right? Into the alien race. He's giving up his whiteness, so to speak, if you go into racial essentialism, which I don't believe in. But if you get into that, then he's giving up his whiteness to fight for the people. And you're going to trash that? Because why? You know, it doesn't make any sense, you know? And there were black leads in that film, and I don't know. Again, you can get into this crazy land of identity politics that just goes nowhere.
It's Hollywood.
It's like evil. It's like a religion at this point with some people. I'm not talking about that with Black Panther. I'm not talking about, because it's all black characters as far as I understand it. And it's not, I'm not talking about identity politics in terms of Black Panther. I'm talking about, well, although it does inform Ta-Nehisi Coates' writing, this sort of racial essentialism, that there's like a soul of purity and goodness in black people and the evil white soul and all this kind of weird stuff. He doesn't use those terms, but it's the equivalent. And he doesn't talk, of course, about social change at all. It's completely off the map.
Is he in the same mind frame with like Louis Farrakhan?
No. Farrakhan's very different. Farrakhan has his moments, despite all the really kind of mixing in the strange religious stuff with black nationalism. Farrakhan has his moments where he touches on issues that people care about, which is why they still are around. It's not just purely a religion. But what I was going to say was that, like, the thing and I lost my train of thought. It was something about, check out, if you want to know what I'm talking about, check out Cornel West's fairly recent criticisms of Ta-Nehisi Coates. He's basically saying, you know, can you ever, like, talk about class? And can you ever talk about things that affect black people in general, and not just upper middle class or rich black people, Ta-Nehisi, you know? West was very friendly towards him, wanted to just have a friendly debate, and Ta-Nehisi Coates just refused, you know? But that's getting into what's behind the writing of the film and so on. But again, I haven't seen the film, not passing judgment, just saying what I've heard from other people. What I wanted to talk about was The Young Karl Marx, a film by Raoul Peck, who did the film about James Baldwin that was quite interesting, and a lot of people saw it and stuff. You know that one that came out? I'm spacing on the title, so
I Am Not Your Negro?
Yeah, James Baldwin. Yes. About James. Yes. Did you see that?
I actually got it from the library many times. Brilliant. I love to watch it.
Yeah.
It's like,
so yeah,
at the end of the movie, I'm going, wow.
Peck had a film before that.
It was not so much a movie. It was more like a documentary movie.
Oh, yeah. You know, I understand.
It kind of like went through the flow of things. Yep.
Well, Peck had a film before that was quite good. He had that. Then he's got, which I can't remember the one before that. Then he's got Young Karl Marx, which is just opening, but they're really limiting its release, unfortunately, like they do with a lot of films, especially political films.
There's this film called
Young Karl Marx by Raoul Peck. Same guy that did the film about James Baldwin. So
is that coming out, or is
it's
that
out right it's now? Out. It's in different cities, and I mentioned Algiers.
It's Algier about theater Hawkins, or on DVD?
Theater.
Oh, theater. Yeah. So it's not on DVD yet.
No.
Okay.
And I mentioned okay. This is interesting. You're bringing up something inadvertently that is worth talking about.
Because I do everything
about
through the library. So
I
understand.
Like
the first one to be like, can I order the Young Karl Marx?
Do that. But you have to watch out for something, which I'm about to explain. There's a European television show about Marx. I forget the name of it.
BBC?
No. I don't think so. And watch out for that. So you're going to run into it. Just do a Google search and try to differentiate between the two. I think they're different. And this is getting complicated now because I'm not 100% sure of what I'm talking about the TV show. But the film is out there, done by Raoul Peck. I'm pretty sure it's two different things. And anyway, so I'm hearing, sort of advanced screening from people that are in New York and LA that this is really, really worth seeing. So there's some interesting movies, one interesting movie out there, maybe more than one, maybe two, maybe three, whatever. And the movies, of course, are going to reflect the increased political agitation happening around stuff that the Trump administration is doing and around the chronic problems in the United States. Speaking of chronic problems in the United States, we're going to talk about the Parkland School Massacre. We're not going to be able to give it the time it deserves, but we're going to talk about it. And I point out an article on the Socialist Alternative website called Parkland School Massacre, Youth Rise Up Against Violence and the NRA, published on February 21st, written by Steve Edwards. And, of course, if you're following the media at all, especially alternative media, progressive media or whatever, you'll see that there are rallies happening all over the country on this issue, mostly high school students, but not entirely. And it's a result of the not just the Parkland massacre where students were murdered, but also the string of shootings in schools and massacres like Sandy Hook and so on. This article goes into basically a lot of the history of these shootings. It goes into what's happening at the protests, the calls to fight against the NRA and the politicians that they influence. And there's going to be upcoming rallies happening. And I'm not, I hope I can get the dates right on that. I'm not sure they're part of the article. But they're, I remember, if I remember correctly, it's like March 24th. Oh, here we go. I'm sorry. They are part of the article. So here we go. March 14th, there may be rallies. There's already been some, as I mentioned. In fact, March 14th, the Women's March organization has called for a coordinated national walkout of students and teachers in schools across the nation. Plans are being laid for National Day of Action on April 20th, which is the anniversary of the Columbine school murders, as well as for a march on D.C. on March 24th. So the article basically, you know, calls for unions to get involved, teachers to get involved, to spread the movement beyond mostly high school students, which is good that high school students are out protesting, but the movement has to get bigger. Goes into a good history of why this violence is there. I don't know if you remember, like, Bowling for Columbine, that film by Michael Moore.
Yeah.
I often reference that film because that was fascinating. That
how that over Michigan was one, and then you go to Canada. Why is it
that point exactly that he starts off with a pure gun control stance, which he doesn't really veer from, even at the end. But he questions that it will solve everything because there are right now comparable levels of gun ownership in some countries to the United States. Some with much stricter rules, like Japan has much stricter rules, but some with not much stricter rules. But you don't have the same level of violence. And the example you just gave was right across the river from Michigan, across Lake Huron or whatever, Huron or whatever it is. Sorry, don't know my geography up there well. They found almost no mass shootings and almost no gun murders. So what accounts for that?
But everybody, a lot of people had gun registers, right?
Or comparable percentage wise, it was comparable. And it gets into this whole point that's rather subtle that I wasn't sure I wanted to get into, but let's try it out here. One reason there are a lot of people in the United States, and they're not just all crazy conservatives, by the way, and I don't think all conservatives are crazy, by the way, that are very hesitant to say they're for gun control. Now the reality is, and I grew up in upstate New York around Schenectady and in Schenectady and so on. Where there's a culture of hunting, target shooting, there's a lot of gun ownership up there, and never any mass killings in my time, never any, spate of, even gun violence of a huge amount. But, of course, over time it increased and got worse, so there is more gun violence there now, definitely. But what I'm getting at is that even people that say they're against gun control, I found really weren't against gun control. I know this sounds crazy, but basically what I mean is that they weren't out protesting every last gun regulation. They were obeying it, you know? Now, then they might debate certain upcoming regulations, which I think is valid. So you'll see, for example, in this article, as I'll get into, you know, the issue of background checks. Yeah, you know, we're for background checks. People should be for background checks. But that can be used in a really bad way, as it is used in other situations. It can be racialized and so on. So, used in a racist way and so on. So our position is not ban all guns, and yet there are formulations and ways that people describe and debate gun control that makes a lot of people think that's what you're talking about. And they're going to say this about us too, by the way, when I get into this article. And that's not what we're talking about, but there's still that suspicion. And that's why it comes down to, I'm for gun control, I'm against gun control. I don't know anyone that's against all gun control except the really crazy, you know, like, I don't know, some sort of libertarian right-wingers, NRA people. But there aren't that. But what I'm trying to say, Diego, hold on, before you mm-hmm. say, yes, I can find someone that will say I'm against gun control. But my point is that if you get into it with them, they're not really against all gun control. So I think there's a good chance this movement can make gains among even people that say, like, for example, they did a poll that said the majority of NRA members or something like that were for background checks. You know what I mean? So what I'm getting at is two things, sort of. One is that there's mood in society to increase gun control in a way that I think would be would help, would be good. But if you bring it up in a narrow way, and bring it up in a way that implies or explicitly states that anyone that wants to have anything to do with a weapon is crazy or something, or murderous, then you're going to send people into that right-wing camp of no gun control. And that's bad. It's a subtle point. Thought I'd throw it out there. There's very concrete, unsubtle things happening here,
I've
too.
I've had a lot of discussions.
Like banning assault weapons.
Even at work with my libertarian boss, who's like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so do you want this like what the communists did in Russia, you know?
I don't think they did that.
Well, I'm looking at him like, do you even know the history of Russia, before you speak?
But that's an interesting point, because there's a lot of countries where people think guns are banned or something, and it turns out they're not. But they don't have the level of violence the United States has. So you got to ask yourself why that is, even as you are working for a better gun control, because you have places like Florida where there's almost, you know, there's very few laws for gun control, and obviously there's things that should be changed there.
That's the thing. Down south, I've heard a lot of people, if I go down south, I just get a gun anywhere. I just go right to a Walmart.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yep.
And get a gun.
Well, again, that could be okay in a sense if there are certain regulations involved in that. And down south, sometimes there aren't. Depends on the state, you know. And that gets into a whole thing. I don't want to get too complicated, but the state
that's like Texas,
state laws
like
versus federal laws and all that.
If someone's trespassing,
open carry,
you shoot them, you don't go to jail because, he was right.
That's actually
trespassing
a thing
private property.
A lot more than Texas, but that's actually a thing that in general. But, I see what you're saying. There's different states. Some states are really, really weak on what would be good gun control and states that aren't. But let's get back to the concrete here, what's happening right now. And again, within the context of watch out for what I was trying to describe, that there's going to be people saying, I'm against gun control, because the people that are now formulating some of the demands, not us, we have demands here, but I'm saying that formulating some of the demands and some of their arguments are like, hey, anyone that wants to have anything to do with a gun, whether you're hunting, target shooting, in the military, in ROTC or whatever, you're some sort of crazed killer and we should ban all weapons. Where leaving the police militarized and getting more militarized, you know, we're not talking about that. We're not for that. People do have, especially in the context of the United States, but also other places, I think people do have a right to legally own weapons and do, you know, legally sanctioned things. And we decide as a society, case by case, what legally sanctioned means. But if you get to the point where you've banned all weapons and demonized everyone that had a weapon or thrown more people into prison, which is happens with some, when gun laws change rapidly in some places, people end up with an illegal weapon, and then this has actually happened, you end up getting sent to prison for something that they didn't even know about or it was out of their control. In certain sense, that's not going to help. If you set up laws, which often happens in the United States and other places, that are meant to cure one evil, but the state uses them, the government uses them for abrogating civil rights or, you know, getting rid of civil rights. Like, for example, you do background checks around guns and you use that in a certain way to create a database that is then used in a racist way or in a way that goes beyond gun ownership or whatever, that's going to be really bad. So there's an element of, like, sort of... all trust in the government on this issue, all trust in the police, all trust in the Democratic Party that's emanating from some of this stuff that I don't support. I don't think Social Alternative supports or other people support is it completely ruled out in the future that there would be some sort of fascist movement that you would have to defend yourself against? Like people say, there's an argument going around on Facebook now, at least what I, my little world of
on Lord forbid, we have a second civil war. Like, there was this movie called Bushwick, where the South uprise.
Oh, God, really?
It's a crazy movie.
I wouldn't mind having it. I would be able to defend myself against that.
these paramilitary Southerners, because Texas succeeded along with a lot of the Dixie, Confederates again. Yeah. And they came up north, and they literally just had a red zone Brooklyn. Bushwick.
Oh, I saw part of that. I couldn't watch all of it, but
it's,
I saw part of it.
It's like, what is going on? It's like one day you're over.
But I meant something real, though. I meant something real, real, very, very real. So somebody posted on Facebook something about the Second Amendment being tied up to slavery or whatever. If you want to go that way, every law in this country is tainted with slavery, the legacy of slavery, but whatever. So put that aside. Put that little debate aside for a minute. What is the history of black working class people arming themselves to defend against Jim Crow South, Klan, and all that.
From Turner all the way.
There's
up
a big
to the
history. Families. Yeah, exactly. There you go. So you have. The uprisings that happened, the slave uprisings, everything from John Brown or whatever. Then you have...
I wish we had... what's his name? I forgot his name. That we... The guy from Worcester.
Which one? Jai?
Jai.
Yeah, I don't know if he knows about this stuff or not. He might. Then you have... yeah, Jai, come back on the show. Then you have various ways of defend, various organized defense using weapons against Jim Crow and the Klan in the South, the most famous being Deacons of Defense. I don't know if you ever heard about that. Mm-mm. It's where you can Google that, the Deacons of Defense. Well, and that stuff worked, actually. They saved a lot of people from lynchings. It was a later movement during the, I believe it was in either the 30s or during the Civil Rights Movement, the heyday of the Civil Rights Movement. Not sure which, or both, perhaps. And then there is, of course, you mentioned the Black Panthers, who started with carrying shotguns, open carry, to stop police terror, basically, on the black community.
They started with self-defense. That was the
thing. Yeah. So if you're going to, like, be, I would say, naive about gun control and just push everything into the arm of the state, of the government, and keeping the police militarized, keeping the military in the United States at this huge... I mean, you know that statistic about incarceration? Did you ever see the statistic about military, the U.S. military power compared to the rest of the world? It's like you have this graph that has this big chunk U.S. military spending at the top, and it goes down really far if you do like a bar graph. And it basically is not only is the U.S. military spending, excuse me, the top of the world, the most spending in the world on military... It's the most spending in the world on military if you combine the next 18 countries. That includes China and Russia. Combine the next 18 countries, then you match the U.S. military spending. If you look at U.S. bases around the world, what is we talked about this on the show, 150, something like that, U.S. military bases around the world.
Counting.
Yeah. So, including ones we don't know about. That came out during the U.S. soldiers that got killed in Niger recently. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the corporate media was talking about how many U.S. military bases there were around the world, including ones we don't know about in the U.S. And that was an interesting moment. Usually, it's alternative media talking about that. Excuse me. So anyway, back to the article on Parkland, the school massacre, and the movement that's building, which could be a really healthy movement in some ways, and we're supporting it. But, you know, we have our take on it as well. And that includes talking about the context for gun violence. So I thought there was a part of the article here that you're not going to read in the corporate media much, but let's look at this. Quote, there are many reasons for the scale of violence, but it all points back to the savage history of American capitalism and the brutal alienation and inequality it engenders today. The past 40 years of neoliberal policies have seen relentless attacks on the historic gains of working people, women, and black people. These attacks have been carried out under both Republican and Democratic administrations. With the profound weakening of the labor movement and the massive increase in inequality, there has been a loss of the traditions of collective action and solidarity, which are vital to pushing back the dark forces tearing at our social fabric. While acknowledging that there are many legitimate reasons why people want to own a weapon in this society, including personal protection, we in Socialist Alternative have also directly posed the question of whether the present situation is in any way in the interest of working people. The history of mass shootings is enough to show the prevalence of guns in U.S. society is not a positive thing for the vast majority of people. Now, I don't even like that formulation that much. I mean, I'm reading it because it's part of the article, but that formulation, for me, is too broad and will leave open to people that care about their right to have a weapon, again, for self-defense or whatever, target shooting, hunting. It'll leave them thinking, by the way, I don't own one, so I'm not talking from that perspective personally, but... It will tell those people that what does this mean when you say the prevalence of guns in your society is not a positive thing for the vast majority of people. Well, yes and no. I mean, the right to have one, you know, you can't just separate from the context that we live in. And I thought that was the good part of the article. The rest of it, this sounds like a more abstract statement. But anyway, here we go. This is coming back to an angle on it I think is important. But we also reject the idea that only the state can be trusted with weapons. The history of police and military interventions is one of attacks on unions and civil rights organizations, of spying, provocations, and as we have seen in too many instances, the ability of the police to shoot unarmed suspects, particularly people of color, without consequence. Peaceful political protests such as Occupy and demonstrations against corporate politics have been attacked by the police and undemocratically infiltrated by police agents and provocateurs. And then it goes into other examples of that. And socialists, here we'll get to the meat of it here, so to speak. Socialists support some limitations on access to guns and the types of guns that are available as a public health measure. However, gun control measures will clearly not solve the problems of poverty, inequality, and alienation that underlie gun violence, and measures to sharply curtail the guns already in circulation would require a massive police intervention of a kind which few would support. That's another angle on this. That if you're of the gun control equals ban all weapons and let the police have a monopoly on weapons and so on, then to carry that out in the United States and as well as in other countries would be the most intrusive abrogation of civil liberties that you could imagine.
Trying basically, to carry that out in Central America.
Basically no-knock SWAT raids probably would be the case in the U.S., which end up killing a lot of innocent people. Then it goes into criticisms of the NRA, which are valid and good, in my opinion. The Women's March, Youth in Power, who launched the call for a national 17-minute walkout on March 14th by students and teachers, have said in a statement, Congress must take meaningful action to keep us safe and pass federal gun reform legislation that addresses the public health crisis of gun violence. This is a good formulation which points further than simple gun control. Yeah, you can read it that way. It's also a bit abstract, but anyway. It's pointing to the need for more resources in the schools to treat people with various issues. Now let's get into the concrete demands that we're pushing. Now some of these demands are out there, which is great. Some of them, not so much. A socialist program for safety in schools would include the following. 1, build, spread, and escalate the movement, including mass walkouts, protests, occupations, and strike action. That's what refers to the current movement of the students, mostly students. We stand, so spread and escalate, et cetera, get unions involved, that sort of thing. We stand for the existing ban on fully automatic weapons under the National Firearms Act of 1934 to be extended to semi-automatic military-style weapons such as the AR-15, which were used at Columbine, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Las Vegas, Parkland, and many other shootings. These weapons were banned, actually, in 1994, but only for 10 years, after which Congress allowed the ban to lapse. For the restoration of the ban on large-capacity magazines and other modifications that enhance performance. Now, I have a problem with, the abstraction of large-capacity magazines. There's people that defining that, especially people that want to just get rid of all gun ownership entirely, defining that like, you can have one or two,
AKs?
Shots. No, yeah. Not the opposite. You can have one or two shots in the magazine, in the clip, for your weapon, and that's it. So I'm like, well, that's just kind of ridiculous for all sorts of things, even target shooting, if you want to get into that, but also for hunting and also for self-defense, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that bear's not going to stay still. I need to shoot twice. And if he's coming at me,
That's one of those funny, not funny, but like gun control things, where if you're in a national park like out Yosemite, where there's a lot of grizzlies and stuff, and they do kill people, although I'm not saying mass hunt grizzlies or anything. I'm just saying that they do kill people. And so the park rangers actually carry 357 Magnums around just for when the whistles and the bear spray doesn't work. It's, boom, boom,
Whereas, what is a whistle going to do against a bear?
Guess what? that's what I used to, when I used to hunt when I was a kid, I used to carry a police whistle around to just make a loud noise if I had to. Never had to, but anyway, that's the theory. Make a loud noise and they freak out a little bit.
All right.
Can't matter. It makes them matter, actually.
I heard playing dead was just enough, right?
With grizzlies, no.
Are you serious?
Grizzlies will...
So that's a false thing, just play dead.
Some people have survived that way and some haven't. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert, but I've read a lot about it and I had to deal with it sort of a little bit at times. And I heard that play dead was not a good idea. I heard running was not a good idea. I learned that...
pretty much.
Trying to make yourself look big... and make noise and do the bear spray and do the gun if you have to is how you survive these things. So the park, back to the example, the park rangers are carrying these 357s, but the people are not. And if you get grizzlies that get used to feeding on people, it gets really, they just look for more people to eat. And there's been little outbreaks of that in the national park system, and I'm always like, oh no, this is horrible. This is really, really bad. And again, That is a little example of what I'm talking about. Like if you had a clip or they're using 357 Magnum, which are revolvers, but if you're using that has at least 6 shots, that like if you had only one or two shots available, It's not going to work. Sorry.
We're going back to muskets now.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. And people do, you know, legitimately, not crazies, not gun nuts, but people that see some capacity for weapon ownership and use, worry about that. You know, they worry a little bit about that. Let's see. More demands, a background check. Now, listen to this carefully, because this is, again, what the subtlety I'm talking about in this, you know, to get away from I'm for gun control, I'm against gun control paradigm, which I think is false, because I don't see hardly anyone out there saying they're against all gun control. Listen to this one, background check, which I think is a good idea in social term sports, a background check and waiting period for all gun sales. Now, again, how much and how you do the background check. Closing the gun show loophole, you mentioned that, Diego. But listen to this. However, background check denials need to be for good cause. For example, a history of domestic violence and subject to democratic accountability and appeal. Banning anyone with a conviction from buying a gun in practice means excluding a significant section of the black working class, for example, or a proportion. At the very least, there should be an appeal process built into background checks. Now, I know that from Massachusetts, where they all of a sudden in the 90s adopted very restrictive gun laws. And to just get a permit to have a shotgun on the premises of wherever, apartment or house, all of a sudden turned into like a major thing that cost a lot of money and cost a lot of, psychological background check, I believe, is part of that, other background checks. And it was clearly there to kind of screw you over, you know, if you want to do that. You can get around it. I didn't have the patience or the interest, really, at the time. Then here's another one. You're not going to see this from a lot of liberals that are out there on these protests. Hopefully they can understand why this is important. The demilitarization of the police and public schools. Schools should have democratically elected committees to ensure safety and well-being of all employees, students, and parents. These committees should have a controlling oversight over all measures pertaining to health and safety, including fully funded wraparound social work and counseling services, and the power to decide what physical measures are needed to protect both students and staff. So that's interesting because, you know, a democratic solution, but also one that not necessarily one size fits all. What are you going to do in your area? Leave it to the schools, students, and parents, and the employees, to the workers to decide. That's really, really important, because look what happened with the Parkland massacre. It's come out now that they had four armed guards there, so-called deputies, who all refused to engage. They all stood hiding behind cars, refused to go in.
So what they're getting paid for?
Well, that's the point of the story, that not only did they refuse and could have saved some lives, but they also had a clip in the news thing I saw where one of them was justifying their existence as an expense at the school a year prior to that or sometime prior to that, and also that same guy had advanced notice of this guy of Cruz, the murderer, had advanced notice of his danger and so on. There's all these things coming out about it that are like, not really related directly to gun control, but related to public safety and school safety that they completely failed on.
So now that's more of an issue of the bureaucratic system within.
I don't know, or an issue of lots of issues. Not enough money to educate these people, or not enough, or a big what a scam it would be to have teachers armed, like Trump says. I heard this interview, I gotta say, of a guy out in a rural, of teachers out in a rural area that basically made the argument, we've been doing this for years. They had armed teachers, or some armed teachers. You can volunteer for it. It's not mandatory. And they included that in their safety thing because they actually studied how long it would take the nearest cops to get out there if there was a school shooting, and it would take forever because they were way the heck out. So they actually voted at some point way before this stuff to have some, you know, on a volunteer basis, teachers armed. They have this training, pretty strict training regimen. So, I don't know. Yeah, Trump is nuts for all teachers armed and all that, you know, the way he talks about things. But on the other hand, I like this approach of a democratically deciding committee. Maybe in some place that would make sense in some limited way. I don't know. I don't want to get too into that because I'm not for it, you know, on a certain way, obviously. Get the NRA and ROTC out of our schools. Totally for that. Nicholas Cruz was trained to shoot a program funded by the $10,000 grant from the NRA. NRA lobby organization, blah, blah, blah. More about the NRA as with ROTC. This is interesting. ROTC, these programs are used to advocate for a false set of ideas. For example, the ROTC trains kids to believe that, quote, America never lost a war, unquote. talking about Vietnam. That should not be part of public education. Programs that teach gun safety and marksmanship need to be under democratic control of elected public school boards or other forms of community or trade union control. So I like that whole angle on that. Full funding for social... Now, this is where, again, you're not going to hear some of these from the liberals that are just, like, ready to just have the government clamp down on everybody and so-called eliminate guns, which, by the way, wouldn't happen just by a law. And also, why even we're not talking about the gun manufacturers too much. It is in the article. But one thing about gun control that's always bugged me, and I think some other people, is that...
The accountability
go after the manufacturers first. You want to cut off the flow of guns? Really cut it off. Cut it off at the top. Don't make any more. But, of course, they won't do that.
What if the gun is Russian?
Exactly. Well, that's another thing. Yeah, it could come in from another country. Yep. But what about controlling under public ownership gun manufacturer? You know, maybe significantly limit the number available, make them available to, again, through a process to people that are really going to use them, hopefully, most likely, for legitimate purposes, target shooting, hunting, self-defense, if necessary. And then, there's another way of instead of going at it from the bottom up of, you know, criminalizing and demonizing and incarcerating millions of people in the United States, basically, through some sort of ban on weapons, why not start a ban on manufacture of weapons under capitalism? You know, they don't think that way. People are not taught to think that way in this country, and it's or in this society, and in capitalist society. And that's really where the guns are being reduced for profit. No other reason they're being produced. So you want to stop the production of guns for profit, you will stop gun production, essentially. If you feel there's still a need for gun production, then you can produce it under democratic control.
I mean, how much do you need? I mean, guns don't expire on you. Like a Beretta 9.
I know. Well, that's another point.
How many are already made, already out there, already in circulation?
I agree with that. That was my point earlier, that if you just ban guns, it's not going to get rid of guns, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's a material thing.
And by the way, if you're going to ban guns, ban it for the police and military. But no, that doesn't happen. In the viewpoint of a lot of knee-jerk, just maximum gun control. Full funding for social service programs in schools, including trained counselors and school psychologists, like art, music and libraries. These are not a luxury. They're a part of education that focuses on the needs of human beings. A massive jobs program, $15 minimum wage, and other anti-poverty measures, and a single-payer socialized healthcare system which prioritizes mental health care would be huge steps forward in creating a saner, less violent society. We advocate all measures that would reduce the level of inequality in society that would dismantle institutional racism, but we stress that only by uprooting capitalism can create a just, egalitarian society. And again, that gets back to, if you think that that's like abstract and not related, think about times even in U.S. history where there were not mass shootings. It's not exactly correlated to the amount of gun ownership or the amount of guns out in society and so on. Think of other countries, like we started to talk about, Bowling for Columbine pointed that out, that have comparable rates and proportionate comparability of gun ownership, and yet don't have even hardly any gun murders and no mass murders, et cetera, et cetera.
Like Mexico, where it's a murder every day.
Well, I think if you look at Mexico,
I'm
not disputing the general what you're talking about in general. It'd be good to have the statistics, but I totally agree. But that's an interesting point you're bringing up, because I think if people look at a country like Mexico and see the amount of gun violence there, they do in their own head. A lot of people attribute that to the inequality and poverty of Mexican society, whereas here they abstract that out and don't think about it. Mm-hmm. They think about just gun control. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's, I don't want to go too far with that, but maybe that's the problem with a lot of issues in this country, that people have this idea. Yeah, it is, obviously. They're brainwashed to think that that there's equal opportunity when there isn't, and that anybody can become rich. And therefore, these problems for poor people and so on don't really, are overcome on an individual basis.
This country's not at that point yet where like what Mexico's at now. You know, where you'll see it every day.
I understand. I understand.
Juarez, Mexico City. Right. There was a time I went to Mexico City. You didn't see that kind of violence.
That's true.
All of a sudden, it's an everyday thing.
Well, NAFTA. You know, like now Democrats like NAFTA now, but
I remember
NAFTA 91. Destroyed the livelihoods of millions of Mexicans, small farmers that had a protected market within Mexico that was destroyed completely. Now Mexico is dependent on U.S. food imports. Imports from the United States for their food system, whereas before they were not exactly self-sustaining, but they had a large amount of it from their own country. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, we're quickly running out of time. I'm going to have to just point to a couple things. I find a lot of similarities, believe it or not, in the massacres, these murders, that get lumped under the rubric of gun control, and I think that's too reductive, although that's still very, very valid, and, you know, I support the protests and so on, in general. To the opioid crisis, you know? You have these big problems in capitalist society, and yet you're never supposed to look at it as a result of capitalism. Whereas when they look at Stalinism, the history of Stalinism, if there's a famine, if there's a flood or something that causes a famine, they blame it on the system right away. But here, anything can happen, and you never blame the system. You never try to find the roots of it in the system. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, I want to say, the solutions to something like gun control or gun violence in the United States are far-reaching solutions that require economic planning in a lot of ways, and planning and social engagement, democratic rights and so on, that are completely impossible and don't exist right now under capitalism and won't exist under capitalism. Same thing with the opioid crisis. There's stuff you can do on the edges, but to get at why people feel like they have to be drugged up, why they're so alienated, why they're so sad, why they're so whatever under capitalism, that's not gotten into, you know?
Yeah. I went to the HR, the human resources, yeah, for the Brigham and Women's, they're, yeah, located in Opioland, which is, for listeners, it's Mass Ave right by Boston Medical Center.
Yeah, yeah.
As I'm coming out,
local listeners.
As I'm coming out from that, yep, office,
yep,
you know,
yep,
this guy bumps into me, and he was like a zombie.
Okay.
He was on opioid, because there's a clinic right up the street, right, yep, by Pine Street Inn,
yep,
where they basically shoot up.
Yeah.
Just like in Maine.
I've actually read a lot about that in the, yeah, corporate media here.
Everybody.
In Boston area.
I literally, yeah, counted at least 20 people just all in their own little zone.
Yeah.
Walking around.
Yep.
And I'm like, what's happening? Yep. You know, it's like.
The other parallel to the gun violence and mass murders and all that is that you can look at even times within the U.S. and find much less happening. Now, does that get rid of the argument I'm making? No, it actually reinforces it, because these are times where the unions were stronger and more social benefits were forced out of the system. You know, I'm thinking of like the post-war upswing, 50s and 60s. People think that was like there were less social problems then, relatively speaking, although there were huge social problems depending on how you look at it. There was obviously the civil rights movement, the movements, that mass movements in the 60s and 70s. What I'm getting at is like, say, the amount of homeless people, the amount of drug addiction, yeah, consumption, so on. Much, much less at times where there was more social benefits available to people, where there was more, you know, like the post-war upswing for working class people was built on these social programs that nobody really understands, nobody talks about much. The GI Bill had components in it for mortgage subsidies, you know what I mean? Free college, right? Again, done in a racist way for the most part, trying to keep black people from benefiting from that stuff. You had the union stronger, which made more social benefits, like the Teamsters have a big pension fund, right? So all of a sudden you had millions of people, as that pension fund grew, being covered by a pension fund. In fact, again, there's a quote, no one knows this quote by Martin Luther King, but he said, he was asked what institution has done more for black people than any other, and he just floored the journalists asking that when he said the Teamsters. He explained, because the Teamsters union had done organizing of over-the-road long-haul trucking, which a lot of black people were doing, and that had given them, by being in the union, for the first time, economic stability at that time, because they were getting benefits like pensions, higher wages, health care, that sort of thing. Teamsters also have their own health care, by the way, system. There's these huge crises in capitalism that people want to solve with little slices of more repressive laws. And in some cases, that makes sense to have a new law, obviously. But a lot of cases, it's not going to do it, man. It's just not going to do it, you know? It's a deeper problem. And this is maybe a teachable moment, so quote unquote, on that stuff. With very little time left, there's another movement happening out there, and I'm not calling it a mass movement, but it's out there. It's a unions protesting against this thing called Janus, the Supreme, and I'm going to look at a leaflet here that we're using in Worcester. Supreme Court considers Janice Unionese to fight back. I actually wrote an article about this. It's in an issue or two ago in the socialistalternative.org. You can look for it, the Socialist Alternative newspaper. Shorthand, real quick headline, Janice is the name they're giving a court case that the Supreme Court is looking at or about to look at, where they're allowing a individual to sue the Supreme Court, or what's the right word to look for, to appeal to the Supreme Court, that this individual does not have to pay anything to a union, even though the union has to represent them. So labor law says in this country, and it has since 1946, the Taft-Hartley Act, which was a horrible thing for unions, by the way, that you, if you're a union, you must represent every worker in a workplace, even if they're not in the union. But the reform that was made to that was, if they're not in the union, they don't want to pay union dues, they have to pay at least an agency fee, because the union is there negotiating for them, defending them if they want defense through grievance procedure or whatever. And this costs unions a lot of money. Janus would get rid of that. Janus means you don't have to pay dues. If you're in a union where the agreement is to pay dues, or you don't have to pay agency fee if you're not in the union. So
that weakens the union.
Terribly, period. Terribly.
There's no money flow.
It's just right. It weakens the unions financially really badly. And where this has happened in right-to-work states, where to private sector unions, some of them have not been able to survive. This is an attack on public sector unions, because this guy happens to be in the union I'm in, AFSCME, American Federation of State Communist Employees. Now, I'm in the private sector. I work at Harvard, which is a private sector thing that AFSCME still has organized, so it's not going to affect us at first. It's going after the public sector unions. Now, why that's so horrible is the public sector unions are more organized than, are better organized in terms of numbers than the rest of the labor movement. So you still have about 30-something percent of the public sector organized. Private sector, you're down to like 5%, right? 5 to 6%. By the way, last year there was actually an increase in union membership, 276,000 or something like that, which is small, but it reversed years of decline. Anyway, the point is that the unions are out protesting. There was already a round of protests in many cities on Friday. I've gotten some reports about those protests. They were in the thousands, but they weren't huge. But it's good they're doing something public. And there's going to be another round on Monday, including here in Boston at noon and out in Worcester at 5 p.m. I think the one in Boston is in front of the State House, but I have to double check on that. Go to your AFL-CIO website to check on that, because this is part of the AFL-CIO being organized nationally. And in Worcester, it's 5 p.m. in front of City Hall in Worcester. And if you want more information, again, go to this article, socialalternative.org. I'm looking at a leaflet that we just put out for it. Don't have time to read from. It talks about how to take a more public approach and to link fighting against this Supreme Court thing called Janus, J-A-N-U-S, to larger issues like the $15-an-hour minimum wage movement that's still out there. So anyway, that's really important. Hey, next time we'll have to get into this interview with Inspiring a Social Alternative, an interview with Elgier Hawkins. And we've had Elgier on the show before. Maybe we can have him call in or something. He did an interview with a member of Socialist Alternative in Massachusetts named Bryant Skoulos. And this is in Truthout, which is a pretty well-known alternative thing. And it's really good because Elgier goes into his political development growing up in Harlem, black activist, and how he came to see socialism as necessary and become a socialist activist. Also had an article about how the Seattle school bus drivers have recently struck and won. Had a little blurb about what the IBEW is. You asked me what IBEW is, right? International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I wish they didn't have a sexist name, but there it is. It goes back to the late 1800s. The IBEW represents approximately 750,000 active members and retirees who work in a wide variety of fields, including utilities, construction, telecommunications, broadcasting, manufacturing, railroads, and government. The IBEW has members both in the United States and Canada and stands out among the American unions, and they have so because it is among the largest, has members in many skilled occupations. The IBEW was originally founded in 1891. As union members, we bargain collectively with our employers over wages, benefits, and rights. Most of us have very limited bargaining power as one person, but as a group, we are strong. With a good negotiated contract, we have legal protections we would not otherwise have. And the reason I'm reading from this is because IBEW is doing very interesting organizing, and I'm not going to get into the details, but very interesting organizing around Massachusetts.
IBSEW.
Yeah, exactly.
International Brothers and Sisters.
Yeah, I agree. And then transit workers won a big battle, an American ATU contract battle in December up in back in Minneapolis, where a member of Social Alternative was elected as president of a union, and a member of Social Alternative was on the executive board of the union out there, or ran for executive board, I'm not sure which. And anyway, that was a victory. So I'd like to point out victories of union struggles here and there and contrast them to something happening also out in Worcester, where they're going after the ATU union that represents bus drivers by just dismantling the bus system, public bus system up back there, out there, just where people need it. And then this I wanted to go into, but we'll wait for next time. German engineering workers struggle puts shorter work week on the agenda. Did you hear about this? They won a 28 German engineering workers union, IG Metall. They have a right to, their members have a right to have a 28-hour working week.
Same pay?
For up to 2 years, then the right to return to full work alongside, more pay, for the same number, for a less number of hours. And that requires some discussion, but it's very good, actually overall. And I was going to get into like this article about what socialism would look like, but that we're going to save that for next time. You've been listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. And we want to really thank all our listeners, both local and national and international even. Go to Facebook, look up Socialist Alternative, Socialist Alternative Radio. And any last words, Diego? Go see that movie you were talking about.
Which one?
I don't know, the funny one with Tom Cruise or whatever.
It wasn't.
There
was some moments in that movie where it was funny, but not funny in a way like wow, you know.
Yeah.
And it's based on a real story, so
we're gonna go out. Well, what was the story? I don't know the story. What was the story?
Well, one pilot, TWA pilot. For those people, there's no more TWA, right?
Right. Gone.
But anyway, TWA pilot got, you know, CIA guy comes up to him and says, "Hey, you know, I see that you like to smuggle Cubans in from via Vancouver, you know," and that did it. And I don't want to ruin it for.
There was another movie like that that came out too. Yeah,
check it out. It's intense.
And check out the young Karl Marx if you can find it. Limited release in bigger cities around the United States. And thanks for listening to Social Alternative Radio. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with reports on the union marches, the gun control marches, and the women's marches, and so on, the women's protests. And thanks again for listening. We'll go out with Richard Thompson.